So we are in the second week of a several-part series here on the idea of risk. Really, that's what we're talking about the next couple of weeks. And the reason we're talking about risk is that it's important that we know that there is no growth without risk. That's our general theme for these couple of weeks. There is no growth without risk. And so I want to start off tonight. Tonight's topic, we're going to be talking about risking rejection to find acceptance. Risking rejection to find acceptance. And I want you to think back for a moment on your life, and I want you to ask yourself, what is the biggest relational risk you have ever taken? What is the biggest relational risk you have ever taken? You know, as I thought about this for myself, the automatic, obvious answer was the day that I asked my wife to marry me. That seems like a big relational risk. But if I'm being honest, we had known each other for 10 years. We had dated for 3 before we got engaged. We had been talking about getting married for quite some time. In all honesty, there was very little relational risk involved in proposing because I knew the answer I was going to get before I asked the question, right? So there's not a real big, there's no real big risk there when you know the answer. So for me, at least, that was not the biggest risk. As I think back on the biggest risk, one of the things I think about is there was a moment when I was really in a season of growth in my life several years ago, and I went on this series of retreats with other pastors and church leaders, and we got together 4 times throughout the year. And the first time we all got together, so it was me and about 30 other pastors and church leaders, none of whom I had ever met before. And they broke us up the very first day into groups of 4 or 5 and gave us a chance to fully tell our story to the other people in our group of 4 or 5. And when they asked us to tell our story, they actually were very clear they wanted us to tell the real story. Right? This was all the warts and mistakes and fails, because they were going to lead us through an activity that required us to have shared a real version of our story. And I'll tell you what, you get in a room with 4 or 5 pastors and know that it's your job to like tell your whole story, particularly the parts you're not super proud of, that feels like a relational risk right there. And then there was the day that I interviewed with Pastor Kurt for this job. Well, it wasn't this job, it was a job of being his assistant. And I wanted the job, but I wanted to be honest, and so I explained all my strengths and told him the things I was good at, and I remember sitting there, and he asked that question that normally everybody kind of ignores. What are your biggest weaknesses? You know, this is a standard interview question, and you know, the answers most people give to this question are like strengths pretending to be weaknesses. You know, my biggest weakness is just that I try too hard, right? You know, my biggest weakness is really just I care too much, right? Like, these are the kinds of things that people say. And I had decided in advance I wasn't doing that. And so I gave a very real answer. This is my biggest weakness. It was a huge character problem that I was dealing with, that I was very embarrassed about, but he asked, and I want to be an honest person, so I told him. And then I sat there wondering what that was going to do to the interview. And then I realized I hadn't just told my potential future employer, I had told my pastor. And I thought, what is this going to do to my like long-term stay at East Coast International Church, because I'd been going here for a couple of years at that point. And it turned out okay, but it was still a really big relational risk. And so I want you to think tonight, what is the biggest relational risk you've ever taken? A time when you went to the vulnerable part of the story. And that's different for everybody. The things that are easy to tell and the things that are hard to tell are just very different for each of us. I've known folks who could very easily talk about their addictions, but there were plenty of other things they didn't want to talk about. I've known folks who were more than capable of talking about ways that they sinned, but there was one particular sin they just were uncomfortable admitting. For every one of us, it's just different. And when we talk about relational risk, we don't mean what would be risky if somebody else said it. We want to be very personal tonight and ask, what is the biggest relational risk you have ever taken? With that in mind, I want to tell you the story of someone who took a giant relational risk from the Bible, and it turned out quite well, as a way of launching us into this idea of relational risk. This comes from Acts chapter 9. We actually talked about this story several months ago from a very different point of view. But in Acts chapter 9, we are in the middle of the first real story about a man named Saul, who would eventually be called Paul, who writes 13 of the books in the New Testament. He starts many of the key churches in the first generation of Jesus' followers. He is one of the giant church leaders. And the story in Acts chapter 9 begins with him being a persecutor of the church. He's trying to kill Christians anywhere he can find them. He goes off to this city to try to... He's originally from Jerusalem, by the way. He leaves Jerusalem, goes off to this other city to try to kill the Christians there. On his way there, Jesus shows up so powerfully in his life. He's like riding a horse on the way to this other city. He is knocked off his horse and goes blind as a result of the profound encounter that he has with the glory of God on the road to this other city. And so from that moment on, his life is completely changed. He is all in on following Jesus and giving Jesus his entire life. And then there comes the moment where he needs to go back to Jerusalem, where he had been from for quite some time, where he had a reputation for quite some time. And that's where we pick up the story. Acts chapter 9, you can start, if you're following along, in verse 26. Acts chapter 9, verse 26 says this: "When Saul arrived in Jerusalem, he tried to meet with the believers," that is, the people who were following Jesus, "but they were all afraid of him. They did not believe he had truly become a believer. Then Barnabas brought him to the apostles and told them how Saul had seen the Lord on the way to Damascus, and how the Lord had spoken to Saul. He also told them that Saul had preached boldly in the name of Jesus in Damascus." That's all we're going to read for tonight, because I want to look at this story from Paul's point of view for a few minutes together. I want you to think for a moment about the risks, the relational risks, that Paul had to undergo in this moment in his spiritual journey. There are at least three major spiritual risks, relational risks, that Paul had to undergo. And I want to pause on each of these for just a couple of minutes tonight to think about this idea of what it means to risk rejection in order to find acceptance. The first risk that I see that Paul had to undergo was the risk of growing. The risk of growing. You see, when Paul went back to Jerusalem, you know the easiest way to find acceptance for him? It would have been to go back to all the people he knew from when he was living in Jerusalem. Just literally weeks or months earlier, he had been living in Jerusalem. He had high-powered friends in Jerusalem. He had friends who were in leadership positions in Jerusalem. He was genuinely valued, appreciated, and loved by all of these people in Jerusalem. When he goes back to Jerusalem, he doesn't go back to them, which I think is very interesting. He couldn't go back to them because sometimes when you are growing and the people around you are not growing, there comes a moment where you realize you are in a different life spot than they're in. It's nothing critical of them. We're not saying that they're good people, bad people. We're not criticizing them at all. But if you guys all were at this point together and then all of a sudden you start growing and they don't start growing, suddenly there's this gap that you feel between you and the people around you, the people that had been your really close friends, the people that you had used to spend all your time with. And I would imagine that this is the first risk that Saul had to deal with. And in some ways, this is a risk that we have to deal with before we start growing. We have to count the cost of that. And in some ways, it's a risk we have to take once we realize we have grown, because we have a choice to make. Go back to those same people we're used to spending time with, which will probably drag us backwards, or risk trying to find some new people. I don't know about you, but it is not easy to try to find new people. It is just hard. I remember when I first went to college, and I've told this story before, but when I first went to college, they throw everybody together in like one room for a couple, or in one small space for like a week, and hope that out of that mass chaos, friends emerge. This was my college's approach to creating lifelong lasting relationships. It was great. I am exceptionally introverted, and having hundreds of peers in the same room as me for like a whole week did not help me make friends with anybody. It like made me very tired and cranky. And so I remember that I ended up hanging out a lot with a whole bunch of people whose primary qualification for being my friends was that they were playing spades, a card game. And when I said, "Can I play?" they said yes. That was it. That was my list of criteria at the time for friendship. Now, I still like playing games. I still like cards. But I'll tell you, that is not the most strategic way to seek out friends who are trying to go in the same direction you're going. And so for about a year, I hung out with my spades friends, like all the time. And there came this moment where I realized I was trying to move forward in my relationship with God, and they were trying to get better at spades. And so I would be up on Sunday morning going to church, and they wouldn't be. And I would be going to Bible study in the middle of the week, and they wouldn't be. And I'd be trying to read my Bible and pray, and they really weren't. And there came a moment that was very difficult when they had not changed, but I had. And so if I was going to continue to move forward, I needed to find friends who were going to help me move forward. Now, doesn't mean that they were, my spades friends were like bad people or whatever, but if we're being honest about real life, has anybody ever noticed you have a limited amount of time in real life? There is a limited amount of time that you have available to you. In that time, if you are going to keep growing, you can't be friends with everybody in the world on the same level. Now, for the rest of my college career, I was cordial with my spades friends, and every once in a while I got together with them and we played spades. But they went from being people I hung out with almost every single day, gradually, to being people that I like hung out with once in a while whenever it was convenient for everybody. Because I was looking for friends that were going in the same direction I was going in. And that is a complicated and painful place to be. But it's interesting, as I talk with people as their pastor, more and more, I hear people telling me versions of that story. "Pastor Joshua, I was friends with a whole bunch of people, and then I started following Jesus, and then, Pastor Joshua, I am not sure what to do with the people I used to spend a lot of time with, because it is not working." And sometimes it's because they're not making good decisions. Sometimes it's because you just want to make better decisions, and you want to surround yourself with people who are making those decisions. And either way, the conversation, what people are really telling me is that I was comfortable with those people, and all of a sudden, comfortable is not working for me. All of a sudden, comfortable is not good enough. All of a sudden, comfortable is not my priority anymore. All of a sudden, I want something, and I know that to get it, I have to take a risk, and that risk is the risk of making friends who are going in the same direction I'm going. And I feel like the question people are often asking me as their pastor is, "Pastor Joshua, is it okay to make room in my life for better, healthier, godlier friends?" Let me be very clear, the answer is yes. Yes, you can. Now, don't be a jerk. Don't tell people in your life that you hate them and that they're awful or something. But notice this. This is not you choosing to get rid of them in your life, because every person I have ever talked to that is in this situation would love to see their friends come on the journey with them, right? You're like, man, I would love to have them all come. If they choose not to go on the journey, that is a choice they get to make. They're human beings, they get to make choices. And that just means that they are allowing distance to happen in between you and them. And that's okay. They get to make that choice. And you get to seek out people who are moving in the same direction you're moving, which is very exciting because we need people like that. The reason I think, again, that people come talk to me about this is that there is this craving in them for people who are going in the right direction, the direction that they're trying to go in. And so this is the first risk. It is the risk of growing, because the risk of growing means that you may need to find friends who are growing as fast as you're growing, and that can be scary. The second risk is the risk of taking initiative in relationships. You know, if Paul had gone back to Jerusalem and he had sat down and said, well, I'm a follower of Jesus now. There are all these other people who are following Jesus in Jerusalem. I am just going to wait here until somebody reaches out to me. He would have been waiting a real long time. But Paul did not do that. Paul tried. He tried to reach out. You know, it says, the very beginning, 26, where we read, it says, when Paul arrived in Jerusalem, he tried to meet with the believers, but they were afraid of him. He experienced rejection, like really experienced rejection. And I love the way he responded to that rejection. Clearly, he kept trying, because somehow he encountered Barnabas. He didn't retreat and say, oh, you know what, I give up. I'm just going to wait for somebody to reach out to me, whatever. He kept trying to reach out. And eventually he encountered Barnabas. And eventually he told Barnabas his story. And Barnabas became his advocate with everybody else. There is such a risk in relationships of taking the initiative. And again, I can relate to this going back to my own college experience when I was really trying to form long-term relationships. When this moment came in my life where I realized I need people in my life that are going to be going the direction I'm going, that are going to really connect, like be trying to follow Jesus as hard as I'm trying to follow Jesus. I remember, and again, I've told this story before, and I talk about my buddy Josh all the time. Not a month goes by I don't mention him somewhere when I'm teaching or in some meeting that I'm having. It was right after I realized my Spades friends were not actually trying to follow Jesus, and I realized I need to find somebody who is. I looked around and I saw this guy, Josh, who was clearly trying to follow Jesus. That's all I knew. And I am not the most subtle person in the world. Tact is not my strong point. And I'm not, like, socially savvy. I just tend to just say what I need to say. And so I went up to him one day. I was like, hey, I'm trying to grow, and I want somebody who's going to, like, kick me in the butt when I need it. You think you'd meet with me once a week? What do you think? He's like, it depends. Would you do the same for me? I was like, sold to you. We're going. That was 20 years ago. I talked to my buddy Josh for 2 hours on Monday. In which point, I got to say, he kicked me pretty hard this week. Hard enough that he apologized 4 times. Because you know how sometimes when you're having an honest conversation with somebody, you say something and it lands a little harder than you meant it to because it was truer than you were realizing? He said something to me. And I'm trying desperately to remember. I'm not, like, withholding it. I'm actually forgetting what he said. But he said something to me, and, like, as soon as it was out, I was like, wow, that was harsh and incredibly accurate. Thank you. He's like, oh, no, I'm so sorry. I'm like, no, please do not apologize for being accurate. I needed that, and not a lot of people in my life were going to tell me that stuff. 20 years later, he is still willing to kick me when I need it. And you need guys like that in your life. You need gals like that in your life. You need people who love Jesus enough that they have the grid that you can trust them, and you need people in your life who are going to be vulnerable enough with you that you can be vulnerable with them, and you need people who get Jesus enough to to know which things are worth calling you out on. And that's not everybody in the world. And the walking up to him that first day 20 years ago was very hard. It's always hard to start a new relationship, to be the one who's taking initiative, right? Because you're three steps away from them, you're thinking, what if they're just better than me? What if they think they're better than me? What if they really are better than me? What if they don't like me? Right? Like, there's all of these kinds of thoughts happening in your head, and then there's these other thoughts like, well, maybe they're just too busy. Or maybe they'll reject me. Then we think to ourselves, if we're honest, any good relationship, friendship of any kind, eventually gets messy and complicated. It might just not be worth it. So maybe I just won't bother. Taking the initiative in relationships means that you are taking responsibility not just for the moment where you say, hey, let's go out for coffee. You're saying you're taking initiative and taking responsibility for all the things that happen after that, which could be nothing, or it could be years and years and years of relationship. You have no idea. Taking initiative is challenging because you don't know where it's going to go. Taking initiative is challenging because you don't know how much rejection you're going to have to face. And this is real life. Paul experienced this. I've experienced this. Many of you have experienced this. If you are in this place where you're trying to connect with people who are healthy and following Jesus and moving forward the same way you are, the first person you talk to is probably going to be too busy. And the second person you talk to is probably going to be too busy. And the third person you talk to is probably going to be too busy. Does that mean that they don't like you? No, it means that they're busy. Does it mean that they're rejecting you? No, it means that they're busy. There's nothing wrong with their lives being full. That's nothing personal about you. The only you can tell when it's personal about you, because they'll say something like, oh, that sounds wonderful. It's just the problem is I don't like you. If somebody says that, I give you full permission to take it personally. 100%. If somebody says, I would love to, I'm just not sure when I can, that's something about their schedule, not about you. If somebody says, oh, that would be great, and then there's that hesitation that clearly they're trying to figure out the logistics and can't, that's nothing about you. Don't assume, like, sometimes we go to this dark place where it's like, oh, they're just making stuff up right now because they don't like me. That is a self-centered thought. The whole world does not revolve around you. They are not thinking about you in that moment. They are probably thinking about how busy they are because they're self-centered too. And so they're just thinking about their whole life. It's flashing in front of them, and they're like, I'm already overwhelmed with my life. I don't know what to do, right? So just don't take it personally. Just try again. Try again with somebody else. Taking the initiative in relationships can be scary. But I'll be honest, the vast majority of people that I talk to are waiting for somebody else to take the initiative. They're just waiting, like Paul would have been waiting. They're just, well, I'm here, and it's somebody else's fault that I don't have friends right now, right? And I'm not trying to say that meanly. Like, I get the fact that most of the time this happens when people have put some work in, and then they just didn't get any response. And so I am not on any level saying that's not hard or painful or difficult or challenging. I agree. It is hard, difficult, painful, and challenging. That's why we're calling this a risk. Taking initiative to begin new relationships is risky because it's hard and it takes a lot of work. But the benefits are amazing. You need people in your life the way that Paul needed the Jerusalem church. Paul went to the Jerusalem church people to be mentored and trained. They were the healthy, stable, consistent, most long-term followers of Jesus that existed in the world. And so Paul, when he was going for new friends and new relationships, and I love this about him, he like went for those people. It wasn't like, who do I think I can get along with? It wasn't like, who's on my level? It was, who is the closest to Jesus that will pause long enough to talk to me, and I am going to, like, insert myself in their life. And I love how tenacious he was, because when they said no, he didn't give up. He decided, no, I have decided I'm going to work my way into their lives, because if I hang out with them, I'm going to get closer to Jesus. And so he just went around looking for somebody to introduce him, right? Like, he shoehorned himself into their lives. And sometimes that's what it feels like it takes. And so I challenge you to be willing to take the risk of taking the initiative in relationships. And then finally, and again, I think this is complicated for Paul, for us, there is the risk of sharing your story. It is fascinating to me that when Barnabas introduces, I keep calling him Paul, but at this point he was calling himself Saul. When Barnabas introduces Saul, Barnabas knows an awful lot about Saul's story. He knows that Saul had been a persecutor, presumably, because that was just common knowledge. But he also knows some of the personal stuff, that Saul had seen a vision of the Lord, that he'd been on the way to Damascus, that the Lord had spoken to Saul, that Saul had preached in Jesus' name. He knows, he is up to date on Saul's story. Saul had, at some point, had a little bit of a sit-down where he told Barnabas, here's the part of my story you don't know. Let me, like, fill you in. And that is an important part of risking, too. It is the risk of sharing your story. Many of you know that I lead our Men of Integrity group that meets during the week. Men of Integrity is a group that we run for guys who are struggling with sexual purity. And it has been one of the greatest pleasures and joys of the entire time I have been a pastor to lead that group. Because the men who show up to that group have developed some of the greatest connections with one another. They have pushed hard with one another. They go deep with one another. And I remember the moment it all started. It started when they started sharing their story with one another. Before we started Men of Integrity several years ago, there were several guys who'd heard that we were starting this and they really wanted to grow in this area, and so they were getting ready to come, and several of them asked me, like, they pulled me aside before the group ever even started, like, but Pastor Joshua, you know my story. It's not pretty. So, like, how much should I be sharing in this group? And I said, that's up to you. It's your story. I don't know. And so over the years, and the months and the years, and I want you to watch this, none of them decided, let me just vomit my story out all at once, whether everybody's ready or not. Right? That isn't risk, because you're not thinking about the relationship. You're just getting stuff off your chest. Right, you might as well just be talking to a mirror in that moment. Risk is assessing what the people around you can handle and continually sharing a little bit more, as trust is earned, sharing a little bit more, sharing a little bit more. And I watched these guys share deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper and be more and more vulnerable with one another. And I watched them, as the vulnerability happened, the depth of the relationship happened, and the trust happened, and all of a sudden these guys are, like, daily in each other's lives. Like, they're calling and texting and reaching out and having hard conversations with one another and sharing things that they would have never shared with anybody else, and it is catapulting them towards growth. It's amazing to watch this happen. And it happens because this group of men were willing to tell their story. Same way Paul was willing to tell his story. And you know, whether you're telling the painful part of your story or you're trying to tell the new part of your story where your life has been changed, there are challenges involved in both. If you're telling somebody who doesn't know the painful, dark parts of your story about them, it's scary because you're afraid somebody's going to reject you. You're afraid that they're going to say, oh, you're that person. Anybody ever been a little afraid that that was going to happen? Oh, let me pull out my label maker right now and just slap one across your forehead and get it over with, right? Like, that's what we're scared of. But, you know, it's also challenging and scary to share the new parts of your story, the parts of who you've become. Whenever I go home, I see my family that sees me 3 or 4 times a year. And they ask me things like, so how's the church doing? I have no idea how to answer that question. It's been like 15 years that I've been here. And I still have no idea. Why? Because they are still seeing me the same way they saw me when I was 18. They're trying not to. In their case, they're actually trying to give me the benefit of the doubt, but they never see me, except for like 4 times a year. So of course they see me as the 18-year-old, because that's who they knew. And when they see my face, that's the only information they have to fill in the blanks with. When you go back to people who knew you before, when you've changed, it's hard. It's hard because they are going to put you back in the box you used to be in. And that's a little scary, because you're, if you're anything like me, a little afraid you're going to start acting like you're still in that box. And that is some scary stuff, because I have worked for a lot of years not to be the 18-year-old version of myself. Five, 6 years after I graduated from high school, I went back and I was hanging out with a friend of mine from my high school years. And I said, man, when I was in high school, I had such a chip on my shoulder. By the way, when somebody says something like this, it is a perfect opportunity for you to say, no, no, not you. This is not what he said. He looked me straight in the eye and said, you really did. Which is 100% true and still a little rough to say, but I have worked for years and years and years not to be that kid anymore. And I think many of us, going back is hard because we don't want to get thrown in that box. I don't want to be treated that way, and I don't want to become that. So that's hard. It's how do you tell those people, like, how do you catch them up? Even for Paul, even if it had been just a couple of months, how do you get those people to understand that your whole universe just changed? And you don't know how to explain that. How do you get these? And so there is a risk in sharing your story, whether you're sharing the old part of your story with new folks or sharing the new part of your story with old folks. It's risky. But the amazing fruit that can happen when you share your story is not just what happens to them, but what happens to you and what happens to the relationship. I remember one person was telling me that, you know, they'd had this whole church experience, they encountered God, it was changing their life, and they started telling all of their friends who were their old friends, who knew the old them that was kind of a naughty old them. And it was interesting because where they sat in church on Sundays, all of a sudden, like, it went from one person sitting there to like 2 people sitting there to like 4 people sitting there to like 6 people sitting there to like 8 people sitting there, all because they were telling their story. This is what Jesus did in my life. It's life-changing. And people thought to themselves, oh, I would like a little bit of that. And then they said, well, why don't you come to church? It'll be great. So either way, it can be risky, but it can be so rewarding. And this is the point. The point of risk in relationships is that you risk rejection in order to find acceptance. There are people in the world who are trying to get where you're trying to get in life. There are people in the world who want it as badly as you do. And the challenge is to raise the relational bar high enough that it is risky. Right? This is what we do. If we don't want to have relational risk in our lives, we lower the bar and settle for any putts to be our friend. Right? It is raising the bar that is the challenge. Raising the bar, saying, no, 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 I want friends who are going to inspire me forward. No, 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 I want friends who are going to motivate me to be the best version of myself. No, I want friends who will challenge me in the way that I think and act. No, 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 I want friends, to be honest, personally, that start conversations with, you know what I just read in the Bible? It was amazing. I want that in my friends. I want people to be my friends who say, man, I do not pray as much as I want to, and here are the 5 things I'm doing to change that in my life. And then come back and say, and here's what I did about 3 of them this week. I want people in my life who are reading books that challenge them to grow and who are listening to people who are worth listening to. I want people in my life who challenge me every day to raise the bar. And I am incredibly privileged to have that. I have, like I said, my buddy Josh, who is constantly willing to take risks. He is one of the most hospitable guys I've ever met. He let someone live with him for the last 8 months. 8 months in his house with 3 children and him and his wife. And they moved out on Tuesday of last week. And by Saturday, he had a good feeling he knew who was moving in next. Because he likes having people live with him? No. Because he is convinced that God has called him to make his home a primary part of the way he does ministry. He is called to hospitality on a level that is beyond normal. And so his home, for as long as I have known him, his home has been a place that is a place where people come and heal. And so he was kind of shaking his head. He was like, I can't believe I'm doing this. Like, well, you don't have to. He's like, no, but I want to because I know what it does for my family. I know what it does for me. I know what it does for my relationship with God. I don't want to be comfortable. I can't be comfortable. Now, if I'm comfortable at home, I'll be comfortable. If I keep myself uncomfortable at home, I know I'll keep growing, and I need Jesus. I need to be uncomfortable. So he's doing it. It doesn't have to look like that for you. It looks different for each of us, but I want to challenge you. Take risks. Take risks to grow closer to Jesus. Take risks, even though there might be losses and rejection, take risks. Because there is no growth without risks.